Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Pursuit Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Antonair. And in today's episode, Ben and I are joined by Dr. Mike Tonkovich from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Division of Wildlife. First, we get into the current harvest data and discuss the hot topic of EHD and explain its effects on our herd health. Then we dive into the DSA, or the disease surveillance area, and explain how the state is still managing that risk of CWD. Before you start this episode, we recommend going back to episode 17, where we give you more details on Mike and his career, as well as a deeper dive into chronic wasting disease. Please welcome Dr. Mike Tonkovich. All right, everyone. Like I just mentioned on the intro, we are here again with one of our favorite people at ODNR, Mr. Mike Tonkovich. Sir, how are we doing this morning?
Good, guys. Good. I was going to comment on the weather, but I don't know necessarily that that's a good thing. It's a great thing, but it shouldn't be this warm in November. I just read a piece the other day. A colleague of mine did a nice job with an article in the Detroit Free Press. Looking at many of the deer management issues that not only Michigan but most of the states in the Midwest and across the species range are facing, and it was very interesting. One of the challenges you would never have thought, right, when I started this job, 1995, nearly 30 years ago, that I'd be thinking about climate change affecting deer management. But they're predicting, of course, that there will be far fewer days. Cold, freezing days in the upper Midwest, which, we don't want to manage deer through starvation and death due to extremely poor, extremely harsh winters. But the reality is, the flip side of that is that without those winters, we should expect deer populations to thrive in areas where they would have been checked a bit more by weather. So, nice day, but it doesn't bode well, for lots of reasons. So we'll get some yard work done, but we need to be thinking about what that really means.
Oh, for sure. So for those that don't know, Mike's a good friend of ours. We've had him on. This is the third time. We mm-hmm. had some issues last time, but this time we're going to make it right. And he was also, in terms of guest, he's our first repeat guest. Yeah. So I don't know what that says about us or him, but we were able to connect at least a few times. He was on episode 17 with Dr. Lisa Burkall from the Ohio Department of Agriculture. And in that episode, he gave a background about him. So if you'd like to learn more about Mike, definitely head over there. But we also talked about the deer herd health, the management that he takes part of, as well as some issues with CWD in the disease surveillance area there in North Central Ohio. So definitely head back and get some of that information. Some of that is going to be referenced today in this conversation. So I would recommend going back to episode 17 and learning more about that. But you mentioned the weather. Before we get too far into the issues and topics around the state, can you go ahead? Let's see. How has Mike been? How has Mike, not the ODNR Mike, but just Mike in general, how have you been this year?
You know what? For an old guy, I can't complain, right? I just turned 60 this past month, so I'm pretty happy that I'm doing as much as I was when I was 40. I feel a little bit more the next morning, but by noon and a little bit of coffee, we get all those cricks and crinks and sores and aches all worked out. So can't complain, not one bit. Just enjoying the fall. This actually, I think, folks have this notion that deer season is actually a very busy time for us, but it does get busy. But right now, it's catch up time. We're waiting for, obviously we're letting folks do their thing. We're already thinking about, of course, regulations for next fall, which is important. Obviously we need to think about these things well in advance. And so we're working on that stuff. We're still scratching our head trying to figure out what's going on with hemorrhagic disease. We just confirmed another county. The sample was collected the 28th of October, which is insanely late in the year. That yeah. should have been over with by now, but, no, can't complain. Still enjoying the job nearly 30 years later. Still look forward to coming to work most every day, talking to you guys, having a good time on the radio. So
yeah,
always enjoy talking about deer.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy topic to talk about, right? Especially if you're passionate about it.
Yeah.
So, Mike, this week, the division, you guys released your harvest data so far for the November 1st and back. It looks like about 40,000, a little over 40, well, almost 41,000 deer harvested in total. And it looks like maybe about two-thirds of it might have been antlerless deer. Is that, am I picking up on that right? Is that correct?
Yeah, right. So it looks like the numbers are about, you just about nailed it there. We're at 24,000, roughly 24,000, just over 24,000 antlerless deer and almost 16,000 antler deer for a total harvest of 40,092. Now, what's amazing, guys, is that you look at the three-year average, because I think I mentioned before, you know, what we try to do is guard against annual year over fluctuations that can be caused by extremely warm weather, extremely poor mast crop, you know, those kinds of things. So we've been comparing all along this year's harvest with the three-year average rather than just looking at what we did last year at this time. We look at the three-year average. But imagine this, the three-year average was 40,073. So we're talking about nearly 20 deer difference between this year and the three-year average, which is a story in and of itself, because obviously, as you guys know, you've probably been paying close attention to the harvest. We started out, you know, the first week up 65%, second week still up about 45%, you know, percent, you know, and it slowly has trickled, and now we're dead even with the three-year average. And again, what started out, this is a weather story. This is a weather year, because what started out as amazing weather and took us to abnormal highs early on. We're now, you know, perhaps experiencing the effects of what I would consider obviously relatively warm, abnormally warm, unseasonably warm weather, which could be affecting the harvest.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm actually going to head out this afternoon to hunt, and I'm was putting my clothes together, and you know, when I shot my little button buck, which I thought was a doe earlier this year, I was wearing my heavy winter coat. And then today I'm going to go out with like early season, September, October stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just give me something consistent, please.
Yeah, no, it's on a very serious note. The weather could be negatively impacting the harvest right now. And we'll find out for sure. You know, obviously one of the best barometers is this thing we call the rut, which is, you know, it's obviously kicking off now. So we'll see how that, affects the harvest, but I'd like to see this weather cool down. I think if it does, we'll see some numbers start turning upward again.
Yeah, hopefully those bucks don't care about how warm it is right now, and they just care about the one thing that they always do. So it's a great equalizer right now. So hopefully the weather makes it enjoyable for us in terms of creature comforts. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not freezing out there, but at the same time, yeah, it's definitely. Now, carrying that over, one thing that is drastically affected by the weather, you mentioned hemorrhagic disease. Did I say it right this time? I tried.
Yeah,
I tried. I'm definitely not a PhD, but EHD is what is commonly referred to. We have conversations just about weekly with people, either here in the office or at one of our locations. With that disease, it's the midges, right? The little bugs.
Right.
Yeah, and so you mentioned the weather. I want to make this a little bit more about CWD and just kind of the update on that, but it's a hot topic right now, and we would be missed not to talk about it at least a little bit. But can you give a quick overview of what that disease is and how the weather can drastically affect it, like we've been talking about here just a minute ago?
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing, you know, I gave a little update earlier this week to our private lands biologist staff, and I think you know, historically, the thinking has been that drought equals hemorrhagic disease. You know, whenever you have drought, you have hemorrhagic disease. But I think we refine that a bit, and the best way to look at the relationship between drought and hemorrhagic disease for the longest time here recently has been drought can enhance an HD outbreak. In other words, drought does not guarantee you're going to have a severe HD. Mortality event, but it can enhance it. But now the more recent thinking, guys, is that a significant risk factor would be, rather than just straight up drought, would be, you know, good rain in late spring, early summer, which saturates, you know, the breeding habitat of the midge, and then of course the ground slowly dries out, creating ripe opportunities for lots of breeding, lots of production, lots of hemorrhagic disease. Obviously, it takes the virus. You know, midges by themselves obviously are not a threat, just more of a pain than anything else. And folks need to know, of course, we're talking about those flies that we oftentimes refer to as no-sams, you know, the ones that are legit, where you feel like something's biting you, but you don't see a thing, right?
Yep.
So it's the most common disease of deer across their entire range. It is not always fatal. In many cases, a deer will simply could, if they've been exposed long enough, deer, for instance, in the Southeast, sometimes are completely asymptomatic. They may show only a few signs. They may show a little lameness. They may show some lethargy. But here in Ohio, because our deer, like any other virus, whether it's a flu virus, the SARS virus, without any immunity, it can affect you. In some cases, of course, it can be fatal. And that's what a lot of our deer are experiencing, unfortunately, is death due to the AHD virus. We just don't know how many survive. We would have to look for antibodies. We're not prepared to do that yet. But it's a disease of deer. I think folks need to know that. So if a deer survives the disease, it's fine, provided that everything else checks out. You know, the smell test, the inspection, you know, the deer looks good, smells good, most likely is going to be good. So hemorrhagic disease survivor does not equal I can't eat this deer, right?
Yep.
Need to know that.
Yeah.
It's not a disease of dogs. It's not a, you know, cattle can get it. We know that some cattle in Ohio, did have hemorrhagic disease, but they are typically asymptomatic. They may show some, you know, again, like deer with a mild case might show some lethargy, lack of appetite, that kind of thing. But by and large, unaffected. So not a big deal. If you do kill a deer that survived it, it's not an issue, but it is taking a good number of deer. It's been an interesting year for us, for sure. The numbers of counties, I almost have lost track. I don't know whether we're at 47 or 48. We just added Henry County this morning, up in extreme northwest Ohio. What's really interesting about it is, in spite of the fact that we've had more than half the state report hemorrhagic disease or confirm hemorrhagic disease, we've had several counties where we've had not a single report from our public or hunting public or just general public. So it seems quite interesting. The harvest did not seem to be affected early on, but it clearly is. We're showing signs now that the harvest has been affected by hemorrhagic disease, especially in, there's a pocket of southwest counties and a pocket of southeast counties where the harvest is has been affected, the buck harvest, much more so than the antlerless harvest.
And I guess you get a lot of opinions, as I'm sure you're aware, with different hunters and different people across the state. Excuse me. And the one that I've been getting a lot, and if there's any scientific claim that I can help explain this to people, but I've had several people tell me that when they either ride in their side by side or they're riding their four wheeler through the woods, I mean, at least a dozen people have said this, they would smell like death to them. And I just don't know how true and how basis, like how, I guess where I'm getting at was how concerned, at what point does it become more of a concern for you as on the state side? And how do we kind of validate what these people are talking about? I guess if I'm making sense there.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think what you're saying, Jordan, is, you know, how do we know how big of an impact it's having?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that's what you're getting at.
Yeah.
And I obviously, there's a couple things. The one that we'll probably lean on the most, because it has no relationship whatsoever to harvest, will be our bow hunter observations, right? I mean, you guys are spending time in the stand. You may be participating in our bow hunter observation survey. That is the best data that we'll have. We'll look at that and say, you know, well, it looks like 100% many deer or 10% fewer than.
We dropped the call.
You guys getting the sense? This is not meant to happen.
the call just dropped. I don't know. You were on.
Yeah, literally. I'm sitting here with my arms crossed, staring at my phone. So I didn't touch a thing.
Yeah, neither did I. I actually have good service, and I'm on Wi-Fi calling just for that simple matter. I actually had a call the other day in Zanesville, and it completely just dropped out total. So we'll just keep running it. So we just lost you there for a minute. You were on a roll about just kind of how we tell the impact. Yeah.
Yeah, the bowhunter observation data, that's going to be the best, right? So we'll look at observations. The harvest, unfortunately, it can be problematic because for a couple of reasons. Number one, we've got 15 counties this year where we changed regulations, either went from a 1 to a 2 deer bag, or a 2 to a 3 deer bag. So we know that that's going to, and we're seeing it already. We're seeing some changes in the antlerless harvest that we're not seeing in the buck harvest. So the other thing, of course, with harvest, we've talked about this before, is that the mast crop this year in many parts of the state is going to suffer, is going to be well below long-term averages, and at least for the red oaks. White oaks should be about where they were last year, but there's so many things that could affect. We've already talked at length about weather that could affect harvest. So we're going to lean heavily on bowhunter observations. We'll look at the harvest. We'll compare the antlered versus the antlerless harvest. Those will, you know, that's essentially how we're going to know where we, you know, what kind of impacts we suffered, you know, across the state.
Sure.
Those will be the key metrics.
Yeah. I guess as we get through, I mean, we're in the breeding season, right? And so I guess one thing, a little follow up, and then we can switch gears here. But one follow up I had. With, you mentioned immunity, and you know, as the deer population builds immunity for this disease, we'll likely see better results from it in the future. How much when fawns are born next spring, are they becoming immune based off, let's say, that, you know, the doe would have this disease and pass that immunity on? Is that going to kind of help with next year? Kind of like how humans have the immunity from their mother, that kind of thing.
Absolutely, you nailed it. I mean, that's certainly how this is going to play out. Is that, you know, these does that survive, and even bucks, you know, that survive, and you know, there's immunity probably coming from both sides. But yes, it's actually going to be passed to fawns, which protects them.
Perfect.
So this is this is not a disease that, you know, from here until eternity, we'll have to deal with, right? It'll be a disease that'll be on the radar, and it'll kill a few deer here and there, but most of the deer will survive at some point. So the good news is that we've got to get, I don't know whether it's 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years under our belt, but at some point, you know, there's going to be immunity. And I'm guessing, of course, you know, the deer that are going to develop at first, obviously it's going to start, since it's been a, you know, more of a Southern Ohio phenomenon, it'll move its way north. You know, the deer in the southern part of the state will develop it before the deer in the northern part of the state will. But
perfect, thank you. Yeah, I thought that cleared up. But it's not all doom and gloom around here. I try to a little bit of positivity.
For sure.
All right, everyone, we need to take a quick break to thank our sponsor, Toby Burdett with Burdett Taxidermy and Legends Big Game Recovery. As we've mentioned several times on the show, when it comes to whitetail hunting, bad shots just happen. If you're in Ohio or the surrounding states and you find yourself in a situation where you need help tracking, give Toby a call at 740-281-6435. Thanks, everyone. Good luck this season. Let's get back into the conversation.
So while we're on disease and everything, let's give the audience a little bit of a refresher about the other big one here in the state. We're going to move on to the DSA and everything a little bit later, but if you wouldn't mind, could you give us a little refresher on CWD and let everyone know how it spread through the deer herd?
Yeah, absolutely. So just a quick a little history lesson here, if you will, for the folks that may not know. CWD is a prion disease. There are human prion diseases like Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease and other prion diseases, Kuru. The one that most are probably familiar with, the prion disease that most are probably familiar with, would be BSC, bovine spongiform encephalopathy, otherwise known as mad cow disease.
Mad cow,
Yeah, which killed, unfortunately, a couple hundred people in Great Britain back in the 90s. So it's in that family of diseases. Unfortunately, it's probably, and scrapie, I should mention scrapie and sheep. Yep. It's also in that family of diseases. So it's not uncommon. I mean, it's not an uncommon family of diseases, I should say. It's CWD is, of course, relatively new. For us, and here in Ohio, in 2014 was the first case of CWD in a captive facility. And, since from 2014 through 19, I believe, or 20. There were four additional, I think, captive service facilities. The first one was preserve, and then the balance were breeding facilities. But it wasn't until the fall of 2020 that we had our first positive deer in Wyandotte County. It was killed in late October by a hunter, taken to a taxidermist. One of our cooperating taxidermists pulled the sample, and it turned out to be positive. Subsequent to that, we've had 10 additional positives. Thus far this year, we've not had anything but the largest slug of samples that we've sent to the lab from the early firearm season there in the DSA have not come back yet. There were roughly 600 samples that we sent. So CWD, unlike hemorrhagic disease or EHD, is an always fatal. CWD is always fatal. It's just a matter of time. Some deer, of course, that we've talked will survive hemorrhagic disease, but CWD is always fatal. There's just everything about it makes it a much more difficult disease to deal with because, even if you remove the diseased animals, of course, the environment is already contaminated in most situations, and environmental contamination will serve as a source for reinfection. So prions are almost impossible to destroy. Dead deer, live deer, parts of deer, even fomites, hay, dirt on your boots or dirt on your tires can move prions across the landscape. So it's just an incredibly difficult disease. Two things, there's so much we don't know about it, but two things for sure. One, as I said, it's always fatal. And two, sadly, it's going to spread. It's just a matter of time. We can keep it at bay. We can slow the spread. We can keep apparent prevalence low where we find it with help from our hunting public and our landowners. They need to make good decisions about moving deer and disposal and those types of things. But it's going to spread. And when you think about the number of deer that are moving, dead deer even across the landscape in any given year in any given county, it's just a wonder we haven't found it in more places already.
Oh, sure. How ironic that it was we got our first case in the wild then on 2020. It seemed like that was just a year of everything.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a coincidence.
Right. Yeah, right. What a great year.
Yeah, and so and like I said, we had touched on that a lot more in depth on episode 17. So if you're something that you're interested in or concerned about, definitely head back. Dr. Lisa Burkall really explained it well.
Yeah.
Also on the service side, on the captive service side. So there's a lot of really good information on that episode as well. And in that episode, we talked about the DSA, which I believe it consists of Wyandotte, Marion, and Harding counties, if I'm not mistaken. And then tomorrow, this episode will air quite a bit after the actual day. But tomorrow, I believe it's a mandated testing. Is that correct in that
yeah.
DSA area?
That's right, Jordan. So we have 14 days of mandatory disease with mandatory sampling because not every deer will be tested, but mandatory sampling in the DSA. We've had three of those already. The early firearm season. We'll have two this weekend, and then two the following weekend, and then of course the 7-day gun season will be mandatory. And for those folks that are a little bit disappointed, maybe frustrated by the fact that they've got to present their deer. Our hope is that if we can get compliance up to where we need it to be, if folks do their thing, we can drop that, down to many states now we're doing mandatory testing for only a couple of days. And I'm hopeful that next year we may be able to have the number of mandatory testing days. So it's important for us to, to get these samples in order to figure out where the disease is at, where we need to focus our efforts. Ideally, our postseason harvest, our postseason removals, because two things are going to really have an impact on the containing this disease: reducing deer populations through targeted removals, going in with surgical precision to take out deer within a mile of where we've had our positive deer, and then transport. Transport is just, I think it's so underestimated, and it's such a huge component. Folks taking deer home with them, some legally, some illegally. If those deer end up on the back 40, at some point in time, that may serve, that infected deer, should it be infected, is likely to serve as a source for reinfecting other deer. So those are the two big things that I really cannot emphasize enough. It's just getting that waste, the spinal column, the head, into a bag, into a landfill, keep it off the landscape.
Yeah, it's all about doing your part. I mean, I know people are getting tired of hearing to stop the spread, but I think as hunters, this is something that we can easily do. Hmm. I mean, we're not asking you to wear a mask into the grocery store or anything crazy. It's just a matter of just following the guidelines that are presented and knowing that the people in the Division of Wildlife are doing everything they can to kind of help this. They don't want a mass outbreak any more than what we do. And so it's important, you know, people think that a lot of times we're taking away their freedoms or something, but, you know, they have to do what they have to do. And I'd rather these guys be able to have mandatory testing for the days set and know that going into 2023, we're in good shape, or we are at least trending with, you know, in the direction that we can continue to fight this. So,
yeah, great point.
Well, that's enough doom and gloom for today. I know, you know, hopefully I didn't want to make it too long. I just wanted to kind of give a quick update. You know, going into next year, hopefully we're talking to you next year, you know, come time that Wildlife Council and the presentation of the new regulations for 2023. But, you know, what are you excited for? I mean, we've talked a lot about disease. I mean, what are you excited for? The harvest numbers look, I mean, in my estimation, I think we were actually 4,000 over than what we were last year. I know you guys go off a 3-year sample, but, you know, the harvest numbers seem okay, especially for the weather. What are you excited for the next coming, you know, the next coming year?
Well, you know, there's I hate to be doom and gloom, but the guys, the reality is that we've got a lot of deer. And we're losing hunters, and that's a horrible combination, right? I mean, there's no way to manage deer without deer hunters. And I'm also a little bit disappointed about, you know, the focus on antlers. I mean, it's okay to be excited about killing a nice buck, but you have to recognize that we can't manage a deer population through the removal of antler bucks, right? I mean, we need to be excited about killing antlers deer, and I think that's where our focus is going to be, or needs to be, moving forward. Is we need to remind people that this is real. I mean, we've lost 20% of our hunters from 2011 through 2020. I saw that same article that I referenced at the top of the show.
Yeah.
Michigan is close to losing a quarter. We'll soon be at 250,000 hunters down. That's 250,000 fewer hunters since 2000, right? And the deer population doesn't slow down. We talked about the weather allowing more deer to survive the winter. Of course, we're not dealing with that situation here in Ohio. Deer surviving the winter is just fine. So, and at the same time, we're seeing, you know, Parma Heights and you pick your city, and it's going to start doing targeted removals. Now, I expected that would come, right? But in those areas where we've never been able to get hunters to deer, that's just a reality. We can't hunt backyards, right, for the most part. So those don't really,
sure.
That's not super alarming. But what disturbs me is the growth in the deer population in areas where we typically have been able to get hunters to them. Now there's, instead of 6 or 7 guys, there's, you know, there's someone leasing it from, you know, maybe here in Ohio, maybe out of state. But there's lots of things to be excited about, you know, in the deer world, but there's also as many things to be disappointed and discouraged, and things that we just need to take serious and get conversations started with our not only our hunting public, but also our non-hunting public. Like, we've got lots of reasons to be concerned. Crisis was a word that my colleague in Michigan used, Chad Stewart, during this article. It's a slowly unfolding crisis, and that's the difficult thing, is that it's not showing up, it's not blowing up right in front of us. It's slowly unfolding, which makes it difficult to deal with, because we've got plenty of other things to worry about, right? So, you know, it's a legit issue. Clint McCoy sent me an article the other day, a lot of things, I'm sure you've seen it, right? If we go to daylight savings time year round, we can avoid deer car crashes. And I believe that, right? Deer car crashes are front and center right now, because we're just now entering the peak season. So it's a good time to remind everybody to be mindful of that. But anyway, there are lots of things to be excited about. I think I'm hoping that we will take a hard look at maybe some changes to the season that will increase our antlers harvest. And some may come as a surprise. I mean, we've got to break with some traditions. More days and more opportunity is really not the way to increase harvest anymore. In fact, I would argue, guys, that opportunity at some point becomes a liability. And I think we're seeing that now. You give folks too much time, they take that much time, and it's easy to not get the job done.
Yeah. No. I have 99 problems and shooting a doe ain't one. I saw that. I saw that. Or she blows, she goes. I mean, yep. Name all your references, you know, and I think as mainstream media continues to kind of help, there's a couple of TV shows that were kind of promoting that as well, you know, just shooting a doe. I mean, it's, you get, what, how many is it now? Four?
Yeah.
Well, depending on the county you're in. Yeah. You know, the sad thing, guys, is that it used to be exciting to shoot a doe, but so that's the challenge. That's the struggle that we in the agency face, and Clint and I face every single day, is try to find that tightrope, walking that tightrope between, because you don't want to devalue the deer to the point where no one wants to shoot them, right? Yes. I mean, then all of a sudden, so you've gone too far. But at the same time, you've got to push a little bit to let folks know that, hey, this is a serious matter. Right, we can't manage our deer by shooting antler bucks.
Yep, yeah. I had a friend tell me the other day, and I was like, "Man, come on now, you know better than that." But he said, "I'm not." My wife made a good dinner. I'm not gonna, because he had a doe in front of him. He's like, "She made a good dinner. I'm not having a late night over a doe," because it was, you know, towards the end of the evening. I'm like, "Oh, that's not a way to look at it." And I was like, "Just go drop that thing off at, you know, a farmer Hunters for Hungry or something like that." So
yeah. But there you go. That's a great point.
Oh, for sure. So, all right, Mike. Well, we've taken up enough of your time in these last three interviews that we've had.
Guys, always enjoy it.
We appreciate you, and we appreciate everything that the division's doing, and our continued relationship between us and Vance Outdoors. And you know, hopefully, you know, come next year, we're talking about good CWD numbers, and we're talking about some exciting harvest information, as well as some, you know, maybe some good season stuff. So, look forward to.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, guys, it's a two-way street, right? I mean, you appreciate us, but we would not be able to, you know, reach folks without your help. So we enjoy doing this. I enjoy doing this. It's important that folks hear what we have to say, and you guys are the conduit to those folks. So we appreciate the opportunity.
All right, Mike. Well, you have a good weekend. I'm going to go get in a tree stand and shoot a doe. How's that sound?
All right. That
during
like
the rut.
A fair deal, man.
During the
I'm
rut.
I'm going to go get on my zero turn and mow some grass. I got lots of work to do at home yet.
There you go. All right, Mike. Well, have a good afternoon.
All right, guys.
We appreciate
you. Yep.
All right, everyone. That is all we have for you today. We hope you enjoyed that conversation with Mike. We have a lot going on in the state right now regarding herd health as well as management, and we hope that cleared up some of the questions we get. Again, if you haven't already, I highly recommend going back to episode 17. We go into much more detail about CWD and what the state is doing to mitigate further outbreaks. Also, if you listened to this episode and you had further questions, please reach out to us at thepursuitpodcast@vanceoutdoors.com, and we'll gladly reach out to our friends at the division and have them answered. As always, we appreciate you listening, and until next time, enjoy the pursuit.